It's 4 o'clock in Los Angeles. It's 6 o'clock in Chicago. And it's 7 p.m. in New York City. Hello, everybody. I'm Mad Dog DeCipio. Tonight, a very, very special retrospect. A look back at the memories and music of Denny Lane with his personal friend, my friend, Dan Ely, a returning guest. Dan, how are you, my friend?
Great. I'm very happy to be here tonight.
I wish you were under better circumstances, quite frankly.
Well, I do. It took me a while to get to want to do anything. In fact, actually, this is my first show since Denny passed December 5th where I have any discussion about him.
Yeah, I know you've been kind of laying low, which if people know you, that's not in character of you. This passing took a lot of people by shock, although it wasn't totally unexpected. You didn't expect him to die so soon. We knew he was ill. We knew he had gotten sick. But there were a lot of people that were doing benefits for Denny. He actually passed the night before a major benefit that was supposed to happen for him, to help raise money, you know, for his medical bills and et cetera. When did you become aware that Denny had left us?
I think it was the day early on the 5th of December, when his wife announced it.
Okay. So you kind of found out with like everybody else.
Yes.
Okay, and I know I called you right after that, and I think you had just found out that morning,
mm-hmm.
when you and I spoke. For those people who don't know you and your story, you have a fascinating history with Paul McCartney and Wings. Interestingly enough, that's how you met Denny. Would you do me a favor, Dan, for those people who don't know your story, can you give me kind of the condensed version of the Junior's farm story?
Well, let me start out by saying first, I was a huge Beatles fan at 9. And on February 9th of 64, I was at the movie theater, and my friend in the Cub Scouts, Mike Nichols, said, "Hey, you're going to watch the Beatles tonight." And I said, "What's the Beatles?" And he said, "Just watch Ed Sullivan." So that was the catalyst that led me 10 years later to be standing toe to toe with Paul. I read in a newspaper here in Tennessee that Paul was rumored to be visiting Music Row. And I made a lot of calls and I checked around. And the next day I saw Paul getting off the plane at the Nashville's Metro Airport. It was in the local Nashville paper. So I eventually took the clues that I had, which it was a top secret. It was very secret, hush, mm-hmm. hush, where they were staying on a farm in Middle Tennessee. And I took just tidbits of it. And on the 16th of June of 1974, I got in my Ford Torino station wagon. It was a Sunday, and I had my cues, and I drove to rural Wilson County in Tennessee, which was about 60 miles from me. And I ended up pulling into the driveway, and Denny Lane and Jimmy McCullough were actually outside sitting on the lawn. And I was in, but I had called up Melody Maker magazine and pretended to be a reporter because I thought that would help me.
I love that story. Can you tell that story? It's so... First of all, it's the story is so Dan Ely, but it's something that you would, it's almost like the plot of a movie. It really is.
I was playing in a band.
Funny if you think about it, really.
I was playing in a band. Paul McCartney was my hero. Wings was my band. And now I hear that Paul McCartney is 60 miles away from me. I've got to come up with some way of meeting him, and I subscribed to Melody Maker magazine from England.
Sure.
And I looked in the editorial page of the the magazine and I see the editor's name, Chris Charlesworth, said New York. So I called him and I told him I was a reporter. And I said, Paul McCartney's here and I want to cover him as a stringer reporter for you. I wanted to avoid any communication with him where he inquired about my ability as a reporter.
Right.
Yeah. Sure. Do you have any experience? And I blew it off. I said, well, of course I have experience, but I'm going to need a letter from you to get in.
Yeah.
And I received that letter. It's up here behind me in this frame, which was framed in 1975. And the letter, I actually got the job.
You can't make this stuff up, folks.
Years later, Chris Charlesworth does a blog about it where I contacted him about the Beatles, some videos or photos that come out, and he wrote a whole blog on the story of me sort of duping him in order to get in. But he said he didn't hold that against me, and he thought I was being very resourceful. So I appreciated his
duping. That's a polite way of putting it. You lied your ass off, Dan.
Well,
lied your ass off. I'll tell you what, though. It is resourceful, and it's quite creative. And I even, in that story, the first time you told it on this program, I thought to myself, no wonder he's such a damn good private investigator. Look, he started young. Remarkable.
Well, I started out watching The Man from U.N.C.L.E., I Spy.
And I love them shows.
All those James Bond films. So it must have had some influence on me many years later.
Yeah, I'll tell you what, brother. It served you well. Upon getting your way into Junior Putnam, I believe they call him Junior or Curly Putnam. Now, I've heard him referred to a couple different ways.
Yes.
And so you made your way into Junior's Farm, and the first people you see are Denny Lane and Jimmy McCullough, the late Jimmy McCullough. Talk to me about the initial visceral response you had. Were you in awe? Were you shocked? Could you imagine what was happening here in front of you?
Well, I was a little anxiety, I would say, getting out of the car with my hand holding the envelope from Melody Maker magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to them, I'm Dan Ely, Chris Charlesworth sent me. And it was silence. And they were just staring at me. I didn't really understand. I said, well, I looked at Jimmy. I said, you know who Chris Charlesworth is, don't you? And he said, yeah, I know who Chris Charlesworth is.
Yeah.
What was going on there was Paul did not really want to be found by any reporters at this time.
Yeah.
And they told me, you know, Paul doesn't like reporters. And
yeah.
So I threw the envelope down and I said, I don't care anything about doing a story. I'm just a fan and I just want to hang out with you.
And you came clean right away. Good.
Immediately.
Good.
And I got a guitar out of the car, which I always think the guitars, whatever prompted me to load guitars in the car.
Well, subconsciously, you know, you're going to see a couple of musicians.
I played a Rickenbacker bass because of Paul.
Right.
And I took this bass down there.
Yeah.
And I got out with this bass and presented it to Denny. I showed it to him, and
yeah.
Denny straps it on.
Yeah, absolutely.
And he starts dancing around with it, and he looks at me and he said, Paul would love this. Look, it was new in 74. I only had it a couple of months, and it was not inexpensive. I got it at Manny's in New York.
Would you pay for it new in 74?
Probably $400.
Oh, that's nothing.
Yeah, but that was my car payment. was $56 a week.
That's a lot of money in 74, brother.
Yeah. And so Denny said, Paul would love this. So I said, well, then give it to him. And I left it. I left it with him. And, you know, that's a whole other story on its own. But Paul kept it 3 weeks. He played it up in the garage where they rehearsed. Even though you're all going to know that Paul is a lefty, Paul started out playing right-handed. And he can flip. He can flip an instrument just like this and play it upside
down. Playing in reverse, absolutely.
And Denny knew that. And that's why it didn't have any bearing, the fact that it was a right-handed bass.
Sure.
So many years later, Denny signs this affidavit for me telling the whole story about Paul playing it and it being there. And
remarkable.
There's pictures of me handing the bass off.
Yeah.
So
I saw that actually very recently, Dan. I didn't know that picture existed. It's the first time I had seen it.
Yeah.
And you showed a lot of photos the last time you were here. We looked at a lot of pictures last time you were here.
Uh-huh.
During your time at Juniors, you spent a lot of time with Denny and a lot of time with Jeff Britton and Jimmy, of course. You spent a little time with Paul, very little, but enough to be able to get your photo taken with him a couple times.
Well, what would happen was Paul would see me. They would be riding motorbikes, or they would be riding horses.
Yeah.
Or he would be leaving the farm to go into Nashville, and I would be out at the driveway. And he would stop. He got to stopping and talking to me.
Yeah.
And he would say, how you doing, Dan? And I'd usually chat with him, and I got to ask him if I could get a photo with him one day.
Had it ever hit you that, like, did you ever have a moment of clarity that, holy crap, this is Paul McCartney?
Well, that moment of clarity came on June 18th of 74. I was not supposed to be at the farm on that day. They'd asked me not to come, and they didn't tell me why.
Oh, is that the day that they were recording? Okay.
Well, that was the day that it was Paul's birthday.
Oh, Paul's birthday party. Yes. Okay.
And they had asked me not to come, but that was the day before. But the storm came through Tennessee, a severe storm, and the party was canceled.
Gotcha.
And so I showed up the next day, and lucky me, the party's on.
Wow. And
that's when Jimmy told me, said, Jimmy McCullough said, look, we're having a get together for Paul down at the picnic area. Paul wants us to work the gate. We don't want to work the gate. We want to go to the party. Said, but you could do it. And
there
I said, what's work the gate mean? He said, well, you go out at the entrance and you let people in that should be in, and you keep anyone else out.
Exactly.
I said, okay, well, how will I know?
Oh, you'll know.
You'll know. It's Chet Atkins, Jerry Reed, and Roy Orbison. I looked in my binoculars down at the picnic area, and I saw Paul, and he was wearing a embroidered shirt I'd sent him a few days earlier.
Yeah.
On his birthday.
And there are a lot of photos of that shirt, Paul wearing that shirt all over the internet. Apparently,
well, he wore it on his birthday in 74, and he wore it on his birthday in 76 at the L.A. Forum backstage.
Yeah, I was going to say, he must have really liked that shirt because he wore it a lot.
So when I was at the gate, they told me they would take me down to the party, but instead of them coming to get me, Paul actually left the party on foot and walked up and escorted me, saying, you know, you're the one with the bass. And I said, yes. He said it would be silly for me to keep it. And he walked me down to the party, and Roy Orbison was standing there all decked out in black, and he introduced me to Roy. But the conversation that I had standing toe to toe with Paul was that when the Beatles broke up, the many fans broke up too.
Yeah.
that many fans went and sided with John.
Mm-hmm.
And others chose Paul. And I had this discussion with him about that.
Yeah.
And it is an amazing thing. You followed him all your life, and then to stand toe to toe with him and have a conversation.
It's a fascinating thing. I can't wrap my head around having a face-to-face discussion with arguably one of the probably the preeminent songwriter of our time, and certainly one of the most iconic musicians that ever walked earth.
Well, what I said was to my friends that night when I got home, I went to an event that was here in my hometown later that night. A band was playing at a live event, and I was telling them I just met Beethoven.
Wow.
And I said to them, and I still say it today, who can you meet in your life that will be remembered 1,000 years from now?
Not many. Paul McCartney, Elvis Presley.
I mean, I met a lot of famous people, but not too many of them, I'm sure, will be remembered 1,000 years from now. But Paul will.
Paul will. Yeah, Paul and Elvis probably.
Yeah.
That was, you know, there's no doubt about that. You know, Elvis for sure. Paul, no question about it. Just the music alone that you think about, those hands wrote some of the greatest music of our time, especially people like you and I that are around the same age.
Yep.
You know, so we know that music. We grew up on that music. You know, I remember going to the movies when I was a kid and seeing Help and, you know, A Hard Day's Night and, you know.
Yeah.
Thinking to myself, this is the greatest thing since sliced bread.
I mean, here's a photo. Here's a photo I took of Paul and Linda at the car one day when they came out. They would usually be going to the studio.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
Yeah, there we go.
And Linda's sitting next to Paul in the passenger seat.
Yeah, she's right there with him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
In the shadow, there you go.
And Paul looked like he was, you know, a happy guy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Hey, we always had, he's always in a great mood and seemed to be happy to see me.
There was one moment, apparently, Dan, a little birdie had told me that there was one moment that they weren't exactly happy to see you. Can you tell that story, please?
Well, it was pretty early in the days I was going down that I was down in the field and I had my recorder and they were rehearsing in the garage. And Heather, Paul's stepdaughter, who was 12 at the time,
mm-hmm.
was riding one of the Putnam's horses, and their dog Rusty, a German Shepherd, was running with her. And on the tape, which all of this you can see on YouTube if you put in Dan Ealy, E-A-L-E-Y, Paul McCartney.
Yes.
She comes up and she says, my mother sent me to find out who you are. And if you don't belong here, to get rid of you. And I tried to, in a courteous way, stand my ground.
Yeah.
She said, I said, well, I'm not really bothering anyone. I want to hear Paul McCartney practice.
Right, right.
And she
sure.
said, well, why don't you go out to lunch? Actually, you are. Or go over by that fence. Or she was standing her ground also. But in the end, I stayed and she rode off and nothing further was ever mentioned about it.
Yeah.
I think it was because I was hanging out with the band most every day, and they would go up and tell who I am and what's going on.
Yeah.
You know, maybe the bass got me a ticket.
Yeah. I'm sure it did. Sure it did. How did you strike up this friendship with another iconic musician, the man we're here to talk about tonight, Denny Lane, by the way, the founding member of the Moody Blues, is certainly a contemporary of the Beatles. He started out with the Beatles in the beginning. Of course, the Moody Blues were contemporaries, and Paul and Denny were friends from the very beginning. How did you strike up that unlikely friendship?
I was just hanging out every day, talking about music to them. I brought magazines that had their stories in it, and I brought some record albums, including bootlegs, that they told me, whatever you do, don't let Paul know that these bootlegs are here. But just over years, we became friends. In 76, when they went on tour and was in Detroit, I didn't go see them, but a friend of mine did, and he was up close to the stage before the show, and they asked, where is Dan? Which floored me, because if I'd had any idea, they remembered me, I would have went to the show.
Oh, wow.
But I had no idea that they would ask about me. And through the years, I just always managed a connection. When I was in England in 95, I was buying some memorabilia. I bought John Lennon's Apple Watch and Brian Epstein's tea set and some other collectibles, and the dealer knew Denny's manager. And so he gave him a call. In about 20 minutes, Denny called back and we spoke, and he invited me to his show.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And then just through the years, I got a call at one time from Denny's wife at the time. She didn't know that I had a connection with Denny, but she was looking for guitars that they believed had been stolen, and they got my name and number.
So the guitars stolen from Tennessee, from Junior's?
No. Just various places through his career.
Oh, I got it. So they were hiring you as a professional.
Well, they was inquiring with me as a professional. Okay.
I got
and
you.
I said, hey, I know Denny, and I sent her a picture of me with Denny, and she said, I'll call you back. And in 5 minutes, the phone rang, and it was Denny.
Wow.
And so later on, in when he was doing more touring with on his own in the States, I would go see him, and we became friends, and he had my number and I had his, and he'd call me and I'd go see him every time. We always have a laugh.
Yeah.
Anytime I went to see him, they would have to be a joke. And once I took him a guitar strap that a friend of mine was with me, and he brought it along, and I said, let's flip the strap over and sign it. He said, why? I said, I don't know. We're always asking him to sign something. Let's just sign it. So when I when we gave it to Denny, he just flipped it over and he saw that. And he said, what is this? I said, Denny, you know how we're always coming to you? Denny, will you sign this? Denny, will you sign that? We felt like we ought to sign something for you. And he said, he started laughing. He said, I don't think I've ever had that happen before.
I bet he hadn't either.
So
I want to tell everybody they can catch Dan Ealy at youtube.com/@Merseyside2011. Merseyside, by the way, is Dan's band. That's your band, Merseyside.
Yep.
And you do all the greatest hits of the British Invasion.
We do it like the Who doing them, and we recorded two songs. I had mastered at Abbey Road, and it ended
I know
up,
that. I was going to ask you about that tonight. So since you brought it up, let's talk about it.
Yeah, our mastering engineer ended up being Paul's mastering engineer, Steve Rook.
Really? And he did your music?
He did two of our songs, yes.
Wow.
Yeah. In fact, here's a weird thing. I don't have one here with me to show you, but we did a single, Secret Agent Man, and one after 909, and we did a cardboard sleeve for the CD. And the CD, we had it look like a 45 RPM record. It had grooves on it.
Oh, I love it.
And when they mastered it and it, we got the finished product, I sent it back over to Abbey Road to Steve Rook. If you go look at Paul McCartney's Run, Devil, Run.
Yeah.
He copied it.
No, for real? Now,
my friend called me. He said, are you at home right now? And I said, yeah, why? He said, I got something to show you. You're not going to believe it. And he came by and he had Run, Devil, Run in his hand. He pulled it out and it was copied exactly, air graphics on there. I mean, it's almost too big of a coincidence.
Yeah.
That it didn't have, somebody didn't see it, you know.
It's hard to see. If you look at this, you can see through the label.
Yeah.
It's a little tiny 40. It's not even a 45. It's a drink coaster.
Oh.
But it's Hey Jude on the Apple label.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's a green label because I have a green screen here as well. But the other thing is it actually plays the song. Oh. You can see the grooves in it.
Yes.
It's a record.
Awesome.
But it's a drink coaster. Isn't that funny? I have a few of them here. Yeah, this is one idea of kind of what they look like.
Yeah.
So you had your song. By the way, I heard both of those songs. And are you doing the lead vocal on it?
No, Billy's doing the lead vocal. Billy,
because I'll tell you what, he sounded like Johnny Rivers.
Yeah, he has a great voice. A lot of people say Roy Orbison.
Yeah. He managed to capture the essence of Johnny Rivers on Secret Agent Man.
Uh-huh.
So you became friendly with Denny almost immediately, I want to say. Let's take a look at some video. I got some video. I'm going to stop this video at certain points and we'll talk.
All right.
Let's take a look at this.
As a private investigator, ended up being one of our best friends through the whole Wings thing, and you're hanging in there, still sending the wine. And see you again soon. And this is for Curtis. Thank you very much. We appreciate this stuff. It's always good to know that you're being loved and looked after.
Being loved and looked after. And you hear someone laughing. That's Denny's wife in the background laughing.
Yes.
Elizabeth, I believe her name is.
Yes.
And she's laughing because Dan, if you don't know this already, he is a gregarious individual who loves to shower his friends with gifts. Except me, I haven't gotten my guitar yet. But you can hear in the background, she's laughing when he talks about you still sending the wine. Mm-hmm. And you sent him, people don't understand what was in that little jewelry case. They looked like guitar picks, which is, I think, is what they were.
Yes.
Sterling silver guitar picks. Is that what they were?
They were in the shape of guitar picks. Now, I didn't produce those. I received one as a gift for the 45th anniversary of Junior's Farm. And Denny and Paul also, and Jeff also got one.
Okay. So how did you and Denny discover that the two of you had a love affair with wine?
Well, what happened was anytime I would see him, I would bring a bottle of Elvis wine from Graceland. You know, it's got Elvis's picture on it.
Yeah.
And he was a big fan of Elvis and he'd go to Graceland,
mm-hmm.
but he wasn't that big on the wine. But that didn't stop me from sending it.
Didn't stop him from drinking it either.
People would ask me, the fellow in the video there asked me, that was at, I believe at Beetle Fest in Chicago. Mm-hmm. But he asked me, he said, I may see Denny tomorrow night. Is there anything you want me to say to him? I said, well, no, I just want you to go to a liquor store and get him a bottle of Elvis wine. He said, why? I said, because he doesn't particularly like it, but that doesn't stop me from giving it to him. And so that's what was going on there.
And the wine that you sent, and we're going to see something later on. I'm going to wait till later to talk about this. But there was, and I think it happened at Junior's, if I remember the story you told right. Didn't you offer him at one point the Rickenbacker to have?
Your mind is working pretty good. You're close. Here's what happened. Jeff Britton, the drummer for Wings at the time, told me since that the Rickenbacker bass became a problem for Paul up at the garage and at the farm because he did not want to deprive a fan, me, of his instrument. He did not think he should take my bass.
Interesting.
So he decided that after keeping it for 2 or 3 weeks and playing it, that it would be better if he just played it and gave it back to me and it would mean more to me. Well, Denny tells me then one day when we're talking about it, he said, after Paul decided that he wasn't going to keep it, I wanted it.
That's the story I heard.
And he said, but Paul wouldn't let me have it.
Yeah.
Paul said, this is a quote from Denny. Paul said, there's only going to be one Rickenbacker in the band and I play it.
Yeah.
And so the bass came back to me.
That was just the story I heard. By the way, I didn't hear the story from you. I heard it from someone else who knows the Rickenbacker story. Because that story that's like folklore. That Rickenbacker story is like folklore in the music business.
Well, here's the thing about it. I stood there with this bass on my shoulder with the strap.
Yeah.
In the field and waiting to ask Paul to sign this for me.
Oh.
And man. I had it around my neck and I was waiting and I looked down at it and I thought, where will I have him sign it?
Yeah.
And suddenly I thought, no. I don't want him messing up my bass. And I flipped it over.
Yeah.
And I looked and I thought, I could have him sign it on the back.
The back.
But if you know the rest of the story, it turns out that not having Paul sign the bass for me was the best thing that happened.
Oh my God. Yeah. I know the story. You told it in very great detail on the show. And I'm glad you did. We have that. Thank God we have that for posterity.
Yeah.
Cause that's, if you don't know the story, folks, go to our archives at youtube.com/@whatsthebuzz and just type in, it's a simple thing. Just type in Dan Ely's Rickenbacker. That's all you got to do. That show will come up and you'll hear the entire Junior's Farm story. You'll hear the story of how this bass traveled. It seemingly traveled the world and never left Tennessee. Remarkable.
I've had it since 2017. It was gone for 42 years.
Yeah. And how it came back to you is remarkable.
It still astounds me that I got it back. And it'll astound you if you watch the story. It's unbelievable how it came back. Oh, my God.
It's remarkable. Dan, let's take a look at another clip here.
All right.
Thank you.
It's the first time I've done it.
Now, Dan, wait a minute now. Look at this.
Oh, for fuck's sake.
Hey, I can't put that on the internet.
Now, Dan, before we go any further, is this in the States or is this in England?
This is it in Nashville on February 3rd, 2022, my last visit with Denny.
Okay, that's what makes it poignant.
Yes.
Here's what I said. I said, when I show up, Denny's going to be thinking, I got Elvis wine. And I had this done in California. Look at that.
Oh, man.
Now, you can drink it, though, Denny. It's drinkable.
It is drinkable.
And when you run out, I'll send you some more.
Denny, that's the name for a band if you like. Denny and Dan.
So I guess.
That was, I loved his reaction to showing him that bottle of wine.
This is that bottle of wine.
Yeah, that's the bottle right there with your photo and Danny Lane's photo.
And Danny signed it for me.
Signed it and him with the Rickenbacker strapped around him. Yep.
So here's what got me on this wine thing.
Yeah.
You know, McCartney produces an ale from his farm in England called Stinkhorn Ale. And it doesn't have his picture on it, but it's produced on his farm. Mm-hmm. And it's super rare, and you can't get it anywhere unless you're Eric Clapton or you're Jimmy Page, and then you may get a case at Christmas. So it came to me, the idea that, hey, I'll do a wine, and I'll give it out. And so I took our photo, and I had the wine company in California do this. And that was me. Denny was sure that I was going to be handing him a bottle of Graceland's Elvis wine.
Elvis wine, yeah.
But this is what he got. And now I've done a whole series with all their photographs on a bottle. But I don't market it. I don't sell it. But if you're in Tennessee and we meet, you just could get one, you know.
Well, how well does that travel to New Jersey or New York?
Well, it can't because it's illegal.
Oh, you can't cross it because for state lines.
I don't have a license to sell it, so I don't.
They call that bootlegging.
Yeah. We know all about that in Tennessee.
Yes, sir. You're talking to a guy that lived in Rockwood, Tennessee. I had a still on my property. I know all about it.
Yeah.
That was one of the reasons I bought that property, because it had an old, I hate this word, but an old hillbilly still.
Yeah.
On the property. No, I sold it for, I got like $2,000 for that thing too.
Wow.
Yeah, I did. Some guy wanted it. I don't know if he was using it or just collecting it, but it was in great shape. And for those of you who don't understand what Dan and I are talking about, there was a time, long time ago, when you can make your own booze on your property. Just don't get caught by the federales doing it, because it's highly illegal and they frown upon stuff like that. Let's take a look at another clip here, because this is, I think this is the clip. And I want to talk at some length about this after we see it. It's about a 1 minute clip of you telling Denny the Junior story.
And now I hear it's on Franklin Road in Lebanon. So one Sunday morning, I drive down there. Franklin Road goes forever. It just goes on and on. So they said it's a doctor's house. It looks like a mansion, and it has a swimming pool. So I get out of the car. I mean, I'm driving down. I don't see a doctor's house. They all are small houses. So I'm ready to give up. And there's only one guy even on the road that morning. He's a farmer, and he's got overalls on. And I stopped, and I said, do you know where there's a doctor's house with a swimming pool and it's a mansion? He said, there's not one here on Franklin Road. I said, are you sure? He said, there's not one. I said, it's a doctor's house. He said, there's not one. So I was thinking, I'm going to give up. And so I said, well, he's not going to know who they are. You know, he's 80 years old. You know? I said, well, one of the Beatles is staying there. He said, you mean those fellas from England? And I said, yeah. He said, well, they at Junior Putnam's place. I said, where's this? Just right up the road here. They don't have a swimming pool.
It's true. He didn't have a swimming pool.
No, he does now.
He does now. Yeah.
So let's talk about that. So Junior's got a pool now.
Yes, Junior invited me to his pool a few years ago. And we talked about Junior's farm and Rusty, his shepherd. And we had a great, great day.
I thought to myself, first time I saw Junior Putnam's farm there, I thought to myself, That's a big old house. He's got a lot of property. I'm sure he can afford to put a pool in.
He had 133 acres.
I know. It's a sprawling estate.
But no pool at the time. But
yeah.
But since the junior's farm period, he did put in a pool. And I had the honor of having lunch with him at the pool. And we went in then after lunch and to the garage, which he converted to his den, and he played music for me. And we had a fantastic time. And I pitched a song to him. Mm-hmm. I had a song title in my pocket. And I said, I don't write country music, but you could. He said, what's the title? And I said, Her Favorite Useless Possession. He said, tell me about it. I said, it's just a man and his wife. And she says he's her favorite useless possession.
Possession.
And he grinned and he stuck the title in his pocket. He said, if I write it, I'll call you. But yeah. I never got the call.
Is Mr. Putnam still with us?
No, he's passed away since then. Yeah.
Okay. I wasn't sure. Now, is it still referred to? In lieu of his not being here anymore, is it still referred to as Junior's Farm?
Well,
or what do we know?
It'll never be referred to anything other than Junior's Farm, you know.
Yeah.
You can't get away from that history.
I was going to ask you about the history. A lot of history there. I mean, you're talking about 3 weeks that changed music history forever. And that's not an understatement at all when I tell
people. Well, I was standing outside the garage on that farm with my cassette recorder, recording the rehearsals. It meant so much to me, their music. Mm-hmm. And I knew all the songs, My Love, Jet, Band on the Run, silly love songs, various different tunes, Hi, Hi, Hi. But they were playing a song one day I'd never heard before, and they were very slow, methodically going through it, like the opening riffs, like synchronizing the keyboard with the guitar, let's get our licks together. And Denny came down afterwards, and I asked him, I said, what was that song, Denny, that you kept playing over and over? He said, you'll find out later. And I did find out later after they left. In October, I believe October 2nd of 74, John Records Landecker featured that song, Wings' new single, on WLS Chicago. And I was listening, and it was what became Junior's Farm.
Junior's Farm.
Sure. So what I found that I had was the first recording ever of that song, because at the time I recorded it, they were still writing it. This was June of 74, and they didn't go into the studio till July 9th.
Dan, I got a question in that regard. How long was it before people became aware that you had a recording?
Many people are still not aware that I have
a recording. But some important people did find out.
Well, I allowed Demetria Kaladimas, an award-winning Nashville reporter for the TV station WSMV, to do a story on it where I allowed her to play like 3 or 4 seconds of several tunes just so people could get a little taste of it. And it's never been...
That was the first time, as I understand it, that it was ever broadcast. I was actually going to show that news clip tonight, but it's about 4 minutes long, and I didn't want to take away from the, you know, the Denny story.
Yeah.
But if you get a chance, I'm going to tell everybody where they can find this. Go to Dan Ealy's YouTube page. It's youtube.com/ at Merseyside 2011, 2011, at youtube.com/ at Merseyside 2011. That's Dan Ealy's personal YouTube page. You can find all of the videos we are talking about on that page, including Paul McCartney greeting Dan some 50 years later at a concert, literally leaning out the window waving to you. You want to tell everybody that story? Tell everybody. I want you to tell that story. But tell them about this thing that you had to sneak in.
Well, let me say this, a final on Junior's Farm. Come to my attention to many years later that an author who was doing research on Paul and Wings, that he called me up and said, you're the first fan to hear Paul McCartney and Wings live in America. And I'd never thought of that. And I said, I don't know about that. He said, I believe you are. I said, let me think about it. Some summer of 74,
yeah.
Paul has not been in America with playing live since he was at Candlestick Park with the Beatles.
Sure.
And so he did discover that me being there, hearing them playing live,
yeah.
was the first time Wings had played in America live. They had played in the UK. Yeah. But this story about Knoxville in 2022, Paul was on tour,
yeah.
and he was going to play in Knoxville, Tennessee. I had no plans to go because I had decided I wasn't going to go because the seats I wanted were $3,000 each.
Oh, my God.
And I said, I've seen him several times. I met him for nothing. I just won't go. And a friend of mine in the UK, David Stark, came to Nashville. And we got together, and he talked about helping me to get Paul to sign the bass for me. He sees him about four times a year at the Liverpool Institute.
Yeah.
And I said, well, COVID's going on. It's still lingering. Let's not worry about it. I'll send you a pick guard, and maybe you can get him to sign it sometime in the future. So he goes back to the UK. The concert's about 10 or 12 days away. And he calls me and he says, I've got something for you. I'm surprised, but then again, I'm not. I had no idea what he was talking about. He
sure.
said, I've got you two guest tickets from Paul.
Oh, wow.
For the Knoxville concert. 10th row. Two of them.
10th row on the floor.
Yep. So my friend Billy, who met Paul and plays we play in the band together. We've both been huge Beatle McCartney fans all our life. He had two tickets, but his was back a ways in the arena.
I'm certain it was.
So he gave his ticket to one of his family members, and I gave him one of my $3,000 tickets.
God bless you.
And I had a poster made up. Where is that poster? I see it. And I'm holding it of me with Paul. And I'm back behind the arena. Me and Billy are there. And Paul pulls in. And I'm about 15 feet from him. And
not far at all. Yeah.
And I've got the biggest poster back there, laminated. And he sees it. And he points at me. And grins. And then it gets better. Because when I get inside with it, there's a point in his show where he turns up the lights and he reads the posters.
Mm-hmm.
And I moved from the 10th row to the 3rd row for that. And as I held it up, he spoke to me. He said, met you at Junior's Farm. We did record Junior's Farm right here.
Yeah.
So it was a thrill.
Oh, God. Yeah, sure.
It's
got to be such a rush to hear him say that from the stage, you know, I guess there were probably 25,000-30,000 people there, it looked like.
Yes.
A lot of people.
Yeah.
And you're the guy that hung out with him for 3 weeks.
Yeah.
And saw him, you know, virtually every day for almost a month.
Yeah.
Remarkable. We have one, I think one more piece, one or two more pieces of film. I want to take a look at this video. Let's take a look at this. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, this might be in Nashville, Tennessee. And the place is City Winery.
Yes.
I believe. Here you go.
Correct.
Great. Do it again, Denny.
Oh, come on, do it
one more time.
Again.
Yeah, you can.
You must be a great drummer because you got the job of playing all those session guys and you played all the parts right. And this is it, man. Miss you. All the best. Take care.
This is Jeff Britton. And look over my shoulder because I am standing in front of Curly Putman's house where we spent our time together rehearsing and doing Junior's Farm. So I'm here thanks to Dan Ely, who's acting as a great host to me, and he's dear guitarist Billy. I'm in America. It'd be lovely to catch up and talk to you, but I'm here. I've just done the Abbey Road on the River, and that went great. That went great. So I've got a gig on Sunday with the boys, and we're just here at, and I've got to tell you, it's been really emotional for me standing here looking at this place. It's part of my very big history. So I hope you're well. I wish you well. Thank you for the kind words you gave out when Dan hijacked you and you you said a few words.
When Dan hijacked you. When Dan hijacked you. By the way, I'm looking at your, as I'm watching this clip, I'm looking at your face, Dan, and this is very emotional for you.
Yes.
And I'm looking at Jeff Britton, and I'm looking beyond him, behind his shoulder. You can see the majestic home of Junior Putnam, Curly Putnam. That is a fascinating property. It's a huge property. I can imagine you standing where Jeff is, working the gate, so to speak, letting in Jerry Reed and Chet Atkins and, you know, the late, great Roy Orbison, you know, one of the greatest of all time. And that's a hell of a way from that gate to that house.
Mm-hmm.
It's no wonder you had to have binoculars. You probably needed a telescope at one point, brother.
The advantage of that long driveway is that you could see Paul coming.
Yeah.
Once when Billy was with me, I took him to, he wanted to meet Paul and I took him with me. We got there and I went into the guest house out front. Billy stayed out at the driveway.
Yeah.
And he suddenly ran in. He said, come on, Paul is coming down the driveway. Bring your camera. So I ran in, I got my camera, I threw another cassette in the camera film, and I ran out to the driveway, and Billy's standing behind me. We're both super excited. Linda's with Paul, and Paul stops. Billy's slightly behind me, and Paul rolls down the window, and he says, how are you doing, Dan? And I turn like this to Billy. I just stared at him. And Billy whispered, Paul McCartney knows your name. And I said, if I ever write a book, I'm going to call it Paul McCartney Knows Your Name.
I'll tell you what, it's a great title. It really, really is.
And Billy stood by Paul, and I made his picture, and then I stood by Paul, and Billy made my photograph that day.
And the 50th anniversary of Junior's Farm is coming up in June of this year, and I will have you back, Dan, to revisit the magic and the memories of not only Denny Lane, but Paul McCartney and Linda and Jeff and Jimmy. And the magic that was Junior's Farm. I have to have you back for, you know, we've got to do an anniversary show. We've got to do a Junior's anniversary show for sure. But we have a lot to do before then, folks. I will tell everybody that you are listening and watching America's Best Podcast. We are What's the Buzz? Seen and heard in more than 3,400 platforms around the world, including 1,352 right now radio stations. Where can people get those photos, Dan, if they want them?
Well, you can't unless you can. They're not commercially available. But if you see this one photograph, I'll get it straight here in a minute. Right there where,
yes, sir,
Denny and I are at the farm with the base in 74.
Yep.
And then I get the base back in 2017. And he comes down and he poses with me 42 years later with the same base.
Isn't that remarkable?
He was a great guy, remarkable, a super talent. I miss him so much.
I'm sure you do, brother. I'm sure you do. I will tell everybody that you can see this and Dan Ealy's first appearance. You want to watch him back to back, folks. You definitely want to watch them back to back. And to do that, just go to our hub. You'll find everything you need. Go to linktree.com/WWTF radio. It's got everything you need. It's a one-stop shop. And for Dan Ealy, for Amelia the Pitbull Chapman, who is home, still nursing her sickness and her cold, in memory of Denny Lane, rest easy, our friend, rest easy. I will tell you, you will sorely missed. He really is. His music was remarkable. And fly on. Exactly. Fly on, son.
And it was Denny who coined my name, Dan the Man.
Dan the Man. Absolutely. You are, in fact, Dan the Man, Ealy. He is. He's the main man here. I'm still waiting for my guitar, Dan, but that's another story.
And your wine.
And my wine, yeah. I'm going to have to make a trip to somewhere in the middle of Tennessee to come get it, because it doesn't look like it's coming to me anytime soon.
There's the picture of me and Paul.
Yeah. Dan had a giant poster blown up. Then that's what it said. Met you at Junior's Farm.
Yes.
And Paul pointed from the stage and said, met you at Junior's Farm. Yes. We recorded Junior's Farm here.
Yes. And here's the 50th anniversary. It's got all of them on it.
Yeah. I'll tell you what. People need to be able to get this stuff, Dan. You've got to market it. You've got to sell it. You've got to. Don't hold on to it for yourself. You're holding on to music history. People want this stuff. You know? Let me know. I'll hook you up.
Okay.
All right. For Dan Ealy, I am Mad Dog DeCipio. Join us tomorrow night for Wrestling with the Future. We will discuss the wrestling territories. Until then, God bless everybody. We'll see you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye.